It's Monday, July 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, a huge blast in Iraq's capital kills more than 100.
Who has given them this right? I am a Muslim. I don't recognize any such thing as an Islamic State. I mean, such as they have set up.
Bangladesh does not see Islamic State connections with a restaurant attack. Disputing civilian casualties of drone strikes. Also ahead, U.S. politics and an FBI probe of Hillary Clinton. And remembering the unique guitar sound behind Elvis Presley. It's all on today's International Edition. Iraqi Defense Minister Khalid al-Obeidi met with U.S. Ambassador to Iraq Stuart Jones in Baghdad after two separate bombings there killed at least 124 people and wounded 186 others. The officials discussed how the two countries can better collaborate in the fight against Islamic State. A suicide truck bombing Sunday occurred shortly after midnight at a busy shopping area, killing at least 124 people and wounding 170. It was the most deadly attack in the Iraqi capital this year. Islamic State claimed responsibility for the blast in the Qurrata district, saying Shiites were targeted. The jihadist group considers Shiites heretics. In the second attack, an explosive device detonated in Baghdad's northern Shahab area, killing at least five people and wounding 16. No one has claimed responsibility for that attack. The two blasts occurred while many people were in the streets after a day of fasting. As the month of Ramadan nears an end, many Muslims go to shopping areas ahead of the holiday, marking the end of the holy month. The White House condemned the attack Sunday and said in a statement the violence has reinforced America's commitment to defeat Islamic State. Pope Francis delivered a prayer for the victims in Iraq and also a separate bombing Friday in Dhaka, Bangladesh.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, esprimo la mia vicinanza ai familiari delle vittime e dei feriti dell'attentato avvenuto ieri a Dhaka.
The Pope told tens of thousands of worshippers in St. Peter's Square he feels closeness to the families of the victims and asked those gathered to pray for them. Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi visited the site of the first bombing hours after the attack. The attack came a little more than a week after Iraqi forces ousted Islamic State militants from the city of Fallujah, just 50 kilometers west of the capital. We turn now on International Edition to what's buzzing online. And our social media reporter, G. Abby Lee, is here in Studio 22 with the latest. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim.
Well, even though the two political parties in the United States, their choices for presidential nominees are quite clear, there's news about the election that's still trending on social media.
You bet. And the trending story this weekend is about a tweet by presumptive GOP nominee Donald Trump. More precisely, it's about a tweet that is no longer. On Saturday, Trump tweeted a meme and captioned it, "Crooked Hillary makes history." He has been calling her that for some time now, so the wording is nothing new. The issue here is with the meme. It showed a picture of her face and a Fox News poll that showed 58% of its respondents associating Clinton with the word corrupt. Now, next to her face, it was written, "Most corrupt candidate ever." And the real issue here was with the shape in which the words were written in.
Oh, well, why is that?
Because it was in the shape of a six-pointed star, which some people found to be quite reminiscent of a Star of David. I shared a screen grab of his original tweet on my Twitter page, at G-A-B-B-E-Y-L-E-E. That's J-E-E-A-B-B-E-Y-L-E-E. Dana Schwartz, who writes for The Observer, first tweeted the screen grab and wrote this. What could Donald Trump possibly be evoking with the reigning money and Star of David? More than 1,300 people liked it so far. But of course, there are some who say the shape of the star is just a shape and should not be interpreted as anything more than that.
Okay, so you said the tweet is no longer, correct?
That's right. Well, yes and no, actually. He replaced it with a new meme and a tweet. He tweeted the same but added two new hashtags, hashtag I am with you and hashtag America first. The controversial six-pointed star is replaced with a circle. The second hashtag, America First, is also stirring up quite a bit of controversy online because it's the name of a movement led by an American pilot back in 1930s who sympathized with Nazi Germany. The Anti-Defamation League had previously asked Trump to refrain from using that phrase, but Trump has been using it since then.
Last question before you go, G. Where is the original meme from?
You know, I was quite curious about that too, and it was not that hard to find out. Mike News that targets millennials tweeted it originated from a white supremacist site, and there's also a whole article about it on Mike News' website, so if you want to check out the details, it's there. Jim, back to you.
Thanks for the great wrap-up, G. And do you think the six-pointed star was an intentional act? You can tweet your comments and questions to @VOA_IE. And you can also find myself and G on Twitter @VOA Stevenson and @GAbbyLee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia at this hour, Australia's voting results, too close to call. China delivers first batch of military aid to Afghanistan. Afghan authorities crack down on drug smuggling. U.S. and Pakistani officials discuss Afghan border security. Mixed reaction in Pakistan to U.S. report on civilians killed by drones. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at the voanews.com website and also through our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues, and we stick with U.S. presidential politics, which took yet another twist on Saturday as presumptive Democrat nominee Hillary Clinton met with top law enforcement officials about a personal email server that she used while she was Secretary of State. The issue has clouded Mrs. Clinton's campaign as we hear more from VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman right here in our studio.
Jim, this is the story that will not go away for the Clinton team. But it does look as though we may be coming nearing the end game, as far as the legal ramifications, but certainly not the political ramifications, which I suspect will go right through Election Day in November.
The Republicans, of course, would disagree with no matter what comes down in the decision with Hillary Clinton's emails as she was Secretary of State a few years back and using a personal server. And there's, of course, an investigation into whether or not that was legal.
Jim, all communications that an agency head engages in are for official business, obviously, are a matter of the official record. And there are federal guidelines for how emails are to be stored, where they're to be stored, and how they become part of the public record, part of the public domain. So the fact that she was operating an email server, I believe, in her house, mm-hmm. calls into question whether she was evading federal procedures. Now, does that rise to the level of a crime? Is that simply a violation of procedures, sort of slap on the wrist sort of thing? Or does that actually lead to a criminal indictment? And that's what the FBI has been looking into for quite some time. And they've spoken with a number of Clinton aides and all kinds of people. On Saturday, they spoke with Hillary Clinton herself. She volunteered. It was about 3.5 hours that she spent at the J. Edgar Hoover building in Washington, D.C., FBI headquarters. But typically, someone who is on the hot seat is the last person that's interviewed. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they interviewed her suggests that perhaps the investigation is drawing to a close. Clinton very much wants whatever findings they come up with to be out in the open before the Democratic National Convention, which is coming up in just 3 weeks.
And this is, as you mentioned, a good thing for the Clinton campaign because they want to get this kind of buttoned up behind them and then move forward to the convention and then on to the general election campaign. But the Republicans are making a lot of noise about this because of a meeting between Bill Clinton and the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, on an airport tarmac.
If you had told me, Jim, that something like this would happen, that weeks before the end of this FBI investigation that we have been waiting for months and months and months, that the head of justice the attorney general, who's also the head of the FBI, would go and meet with a former president who is the husband of the presumptive Democratic nominee who has been endorsed by the sitting president for whom the attorney general works. And Republicans have been having a field day with this as a conflict of interest. Now, it was on a tarmac. Apparently, there were other people around. Clinton and Attorney General Lynch, they all say that it was just a friendly meeting, that it was a chance encounter, and they engaged in some small talk banter. Republicans are having none of that. Donald Trump has been mocking that assessment on the campaign trail ever since. Let's just say that whether or not any inappropriate information was exchanged, what we call in Washington the optics of a moment like that were very poorly chosen.
VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman, thanks so much. And I know we're going to be revisiting this topic at least once along the way.
I can't wait, Jim. Thanks.
Bangladesh is observing 2 days of mourning after a group of 7 Islamist militants killed 20 hostages and 2 police officers during an 11-hour siege in an upscale restaurant in Dhaka. Islamic State has claimed responsibility for the attack, but any direct connection to the militant group has not been confirmed, and government officials deny Islamic State involvement. Bangladesh's home minister said Sunday the 7 attackers, 6 of whom were killed, had absolutely no connection with Islamic State, saying all of the attackers were Bangladeshis, well-educated, and came from wealthy families. Bangladeshi police, meanwhile, released photos and the first names of the 5 of 6 attackers who were killed. Police said their families had not been in contact with them for months. The government has long insisted Islamic State has no presence in the country. Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina's government has blamed a string of attacks in the country on her political foes, saying they back militant groups in the country in an attempt to create chaos. Kamal Hossein, a former foreign minister and law minister of Bangladesh, tells VOA terrorism has nothing to do with religion, and therefore Islamic State is not representative of Islam or the Muslim world.
I am amazed that in the middle of the 21st century, we are suddenly being presented with somebody who, in a most arrogant way, have arrogated to themselves the right to say that they are Islamic State or they are Daesh. Who has given them this right? I am a Muslim. I don't recognize any such thing as an Islamic State. I mean, such as they have set up.
Hossein says that the whole world should adapt a unified policy to deal with terrorist groups like Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. And he was surprised that Bangladesh was selected as a target.
It's amazing why they should be targeted in this way, much more so Bangladesh, because here we have not allowed religion to be a source of discord. We said everyone has freedom of religion. No one will impose. And this, I believe, is entirely consistent with our own religion.
The attack began late Friday when the gunmen entered the Holy Artisan Bakery, which was located in the diplomatic zone of Dhaka. The siege ended when security forces stormed the building, killing 6 attackers and capturing 1. Most of the victims were hacked to death, and their killer sent photographs of the carnage to Islamic State during the standoff. Early Saturday, more than 10 hours after the hostage crisis began, scores of commandos converged on the restaurant. Gunfire and explosions were heard. Bangladesh authorities have deployed heavy security throughout the capital after the hostage crisis that left 20 mostly foreign civilians dead. Security forces rescued 13 hostages during the siege. Among the 11 men and 9 women killed are 9 Italians, 7 Japanese nationals, 2 Bangladeshis, 1 Indian, and an American. 3 of the victims were students at universities in the United States. 2 Bangladeshi police officers were also killed early in the siege. The White House and the U.S. State Department condemned the attack and said the United States stands with Bangladesh and is resolved to confront terror wherever it occurs. Reaction to the White House report on civilian casualties in drones was mixed in Pakistan. That country has suffered the highest number of strikes and casualties outside active conflict zones. VOA's Aisha Tanzim has more from Islamabad.
Responding to the U.S. drone report, Pakistan's Foreign Office reiterated its calls for an immediate cessation of drone strikes. The statement said the strikes violated Pakistan's territorial integrity and sovereignty. Pakistan's government routinely denounces the strikes, which are deeply unpopular among the public, but authorities are believed to privately consent to the operations targeting militants in the country's tribal regions. Critics of drone strikes in Pakistan questioned the U.S. numbers. How could anyone know whether each person present at a targeted strike is a militant or civilian, some of them asked. The chairperson of the Human Rights Commission of Pakistan, Zohra Yusuf, called the strikes a form of extrajudicial killings. At the same time, she said the reality was that most of those who died in these strikes were militants.
The reality is
Yusuf also said that compared to aerial bombing, which resulted in much higher civilian casualties, the civilian deaths from drones were much lower. Drone strikes was a much bigger issue in Pakistan a couple of years ago when the frequency of these strikes was higher. Over the last 5 years, they have gone down significantly from 128 in 2010 to 13 last year and only 3 this year. Aisha Tanzeem, VOA News, Islamabad.
You may visit voanews.com for much more on this story. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE and like us on Facebook at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. Behind every great solo artist are an often unsung group of talented musicians creating that special sound that becomes a trademark for that big star. It was true for Elvis Presley, the larger-than-life pop star who remains one of the biggest music success stories 40 years after his death. Behind Elvis was a guitar player who defined a new sound for a new generation. Scotty Moore has now passed away, but we remember his contribution to music with VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald.
Hey, Jim. I mean, Elvis would have been Elvis no matter who he played with, but we lost one of the architects of what we think of as rock and roll this week. I mean, even if you're a young music fan and you've never heard the music of Elvis Presley, this guy's work still resonates in music that you would hear today. His name was Scotty Moore. He died on June 28th at his home in Nashville. He was 84 years old. As Elvis Presley's lead guitarist in the 50s and 60s, he really helped create the sound we know today as rock and roll. He was an artist with the guitar. His guitar work sometimes worked with Elvis, sometimes against him. And it all goes back to July 1954. That was when Scotty Moore met Elvis at Sam Phillips' Sun Records studio in Memphis. Now, he and Elvis and bassist Bill Black were in the studio trying to put something together, and nothing was working. And so finally, at the very end, they came up with an adaptation of a Big Boy Crudup single called That's All Right. Mm. It made rock history. It was Elvis's first single, and it's sort of like the Big Bang of rock and roll. Subsequent singles included Mystery Train, Heartbreak Hotel, Jailhouse Rock, Blue Suede Shoes, all of these great singles that have passed into rock and roll lore. And they influenced so many artists who came afterward. And people like Jeff Beck, Keith Richards, Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin, they all said listening to Scotty Moore helped them decide to become rock guitarists themselves. The good years were from 1954 to 58 when Elvis was drafted into the Army. At that time, Scotty Moore had only earned a few thousand dollars from his work with Elvis, who, of course, became a multimillionaire. Mm-hmm. Now, he stuck around Sun Studios, producing other artists and working as a studio manager until 1964, when Sam showed him the door. He made some records with other artists. He produced some other artists. He reunited with Elvis in 1968 at Elvis's famous televised comeback concert. Scotty Moore was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in the year 2000, and Rolling Stone ranked him as the 29th best guitar player of all time. So it's been a crazy news week, but this was a quiet but profound loss for music.
Absolutely. Elvis was such a larger-than-life figure, but not far behind him. Was the music.
And if you listen to that, I was just listening to those songs the other day, and they still hold up today.
Mm-hmm.
It's the artistry behind it, the energy and the creativity. And you could tell it must have been incredibly galvanizing for people, 60 years ago. Scotty was the mastermind behind it.
And the master behind our Top 20 Countdown is none other than Ray McDonald. And you can find him on Twitter, too.
You can find me on Twitter at Ray on the Hits if you want to explore the music of Scotty Moore a little further. And, of course, I have a lot of other stuff waiting there for you, too.
We look forward to it. Thank you so much, Ray.
You got it, Jim.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can always find us at our website, voanews.com. Like us on Facebook, VOA Now. And follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Daryl Smith. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope you have a wonderful day.
An editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Self-government, that is, a people exercising all the necessary functions of power without interference by a higher authority that they can't control themselves, is a core American value. It's also at the heart of the Declaration of Independence, which we celebrate today. Thomas Jefferson, the document's primary author, wrote that self-rule is the separate and equal station that a people are entitled to under the laws of God and nature. It didn't come easily. America's early history is marked by conflict with other countries threatened by Republican government and among Americans themselves over the ultimate form that that government would take. But the Declaration laid the framework for a nation that would endure and grow, inspiring similar independence movements around the world. When war first broke out between Britain and its North American colonists, few imagined, let alone supported, the creation of a new nation. Historians note that even as the fighting raged, the colonists were deeply divided over the future. Roughly a third came to believe a complete break with Britain was needed. A third remained loyal to the British crown, and a third simply wanted to be left alone to raise their families and do their jobs. The 56 men who signed the Declaration on July 4, 1776, cast the first votes for independence. Their fellow citizens ratified the choice, and with it the then radical principle that government should be based on the consent of the governed. While this is the event and cause we celebrate today, it isn't unique to Americans. It is embodied in the constitutions of many nations and observed in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that we all recognize. In essence, then, Independence Day is a celebration of our common humanity.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.